Well, good morning. My name is Wally Reardon, and this is our discussion on the tower industry. What's changed over the last 15 years in the industry since the 100% tie-off policy was promulgated by OSHA? And that's the principle of being connected to the structure at all times. There are many issues that other issues to cover in the industry. It's a very complex and dynamic industry, but in the sake of time, I'm going to move through this quickly. Here's our disclosure statement. I started climbing in 1992. I was attracted to the danger, the thrill of the occupation. I had no trade skills when I started. And like most tower climbers in the industry, today you hear in the industry they like to be called tower technicians. They like to have professional names, but my best friend and I, who was in that picture, Jeff, we consider ourselves climbers, and we love to climb on anything there was. You put up an anticline, we're going over it. We aren't going to put a ladder up. So this is the way we were. Since the 100% tie-off began in 1994, the industry struggled to fall into compliance. The National Association of Tower Erectors started as a result. Mainly, from my opinion, it was a bunch of company owners who felt threatened by the new OSHA regulations. And frankly, there were problems being able to fall into compliance with 100% policies. One example is to have a 5,000-pound anchor for a fall arrest connection point, some towers wouldn't even begin to stand that sort of, take that sort of a force. In 2001, NIOSH produced an alert on the tower industry, and it's a study of the industry after a series of really tragic fatalities, multiple fatalities, particularly in North Carolina. But the number here I wanted to point out is that 10 to 100 times the average rate of 5 deaths per 100,000 workers across all industries. It's an extremely vague number, to say the least, which goes to show that they really didn't have any idea what was going on in the industry. And frankly, today in the industry, the information clearinghouse is either through the National Association of Tower Erectors or a trade organization, a trade website called Wireless Estimator, where we get most of our data from, because that's basically all there is to get data from, other than sifting through OSHA records, which I do in my spare time. But in the industry, again, I want to give some credit to Nate. They did create standards in the industry for the telecommunications industry, and that was very important. But as far as the industry goes and members, I was injured I was taken out of work in 2002, and I went through a series of surgeries. And in that period of time, I noticed a lot of climbers were falling. And I kept scratching my head going, well, you know, I kept asking if this was a problem. My coworkers, I said, are guys tying off anymore? Is anybody tying off? Because guys are falling. If you're supposed to be connected to the structure all the time, nobody should be falling. And so when I called some regulators. I called companies who train climbers. That's their profession. I asked them if there's a culture of free climbing going on today. I told them that I felt pressured to free climb when I was a foreman because of time constraints, and we're going to talk about work speed up. But again, safety is a facade, I feel, in the industry. It's a wall that says you need to look no further. And whenever we run across other tower companies in the field in a restaurant, we all say, well, yeah, we all, you know, we always tie off. We always follow OSHA policy. You know, you make sure you do. You know, but I never seen another crew in the field ever my entire career of climbing who followed this policy. And I'm going to give more examples later on, but I could have said that I haven't seen one ever until this spring I came across a crew who was tied off. So one crew kind of made a liar out of me. But the wireless industry boom has led to a lot of fatalities in the industry, like I said, which led up to the report of the NIOSH report. Back before that, the PCS build was going on, Sprint, Nextel, Wireless, Verizon. That's what seems to result in a lot of fatalities. In 2008, it was a particularly deadly year too. It had the nation's, or the first time ever that five climbers died in a 12-day period, which resulted in a stand down in the industry to try and sort out the problems and address the issue of we're going too fast, we're working too fast, and we're under some pressure, and maybe we should deal with this. And real quickly, I'd like to point out in this picture that you notice there's two guys on that tower. There's only room for one guy on that tower, and there's no reason for that other guy to be up there, but that was on a construction job site that I was on toward the end. So we talk about work speed up, and this is a critical component of this. Tower companies have blocks of sites dumped on them by the carriers who have all the power and all the money in the industry. And most companies are small companies, 10 to 15 workers, employees. It's kind of an average number. And you'll be given a block of 10 sites to do in a month, where, you know, to do it safely, it might take you a week to do one site. So what does this mean? An ideal crew size where everybody's keeping busy and everybody can work safely, where the work is distributed, so everybody has a job, so everything can be covered, is 4 men. But to follow in compliant or to meet the demands in the industry, crews are split up. Now a work truck is sent out on a job site with a safety equipment for one crew. You split up a crew, safety equipment's going to be divvied up? I don't think so. You know, how do we answer that problem? And there's another problem with tower climbers being sent out alone. That was a big taboo to us, and we went and did it. We preached to the new guys to start, don't ever do this, you know. And, of course, we'd go do it ourselves the first chance we were asked, you know, because we were too chicken to say we were going to stand our ground and not do it on a moral issue. But I've also talked with OSHA investigators who said that there's no regulation against it, but it is a problem if a worker gets hurt. Last year, we had a worker got killed who was working alone. He was dismantling a 180-foot tower by himself. He fell. His wife called up called up the next morning. She was searching for him all night. He never came home. He just thought, you know, he was sent someplace, and they found him at the base of the tower the next morning. Like I said, the pressures in the industry, the splitting up of the crews, just intensifies this pressure to free climb. I just went back one.
Just go back.
Yep, just back one. Oh, thank you. And the bidding structure is another crucial component. It goes to the cheapest bidder. Who can do this the cheapest? And when we interview tower companies, their main concern is company B, C, and D. They send their crews out. They free climb all the time. They're cutting our throats because they're doing this quicker. And I'll go to company C, and they'll say, well, A, B, and D are doing it. And that's the way this is, and it's a vicious circle. And the way fatalities are tracked, it's only been tracked so far in the industry, according to Wardo's estimator. There's a fatality a few weeks ago. A Latino male was killed on a tower who was working on a power line transmission tower, a utility tower. The company he worked for also worked on communication towers, and I called up the gentleman who has the website, and I brought that to his attention, and he said, well, I'm not going to count that because he was working on a utility tower. So how are we going to get numbers if the numbers are being cherry-picked? Numbers are not being counted if climbers are being killed on the ground, and many are killed on the ground, and injuries are the real taboo, and nobody has a clue as what kind of injuries are going on. And like I said, most companies say they comply, but they blame it on their competitors, and fatalities get the media attention, and the injuries don't, and it's a huge struggle to find any information out on any worker who's injured. Here's a picture that was taken out of my local newspaper a couple of years ago, and there's a gentleman they were building a tower in Canton, New York. This guy wasn't too bashful about having his picture taken by a reporter, and this company is also a NAIT member and prides themselves on their work safety record and their standards. Call themselves a leader of safety in the industry. On their own website. I'll give you a picture of the citations that I've seen in this one picture. When I present to OSHA and I do this to them, this makes their eyes open up.
Wow.
It's very humbling. Here's a climber who was working less than a half a mile from my home. The piece of equipment, you'll see, it looks like he's working safely. There's a cable you can barely see that's going down, and he's got it hooked to his fall arrest, so it looks like he's hooked to some kind of safety device. But what he's doing, he's actually rigging the tower with a cable that goes to a winch that hoists equipment up and down the tower. that's completely slack on the ground. He's using his fall arrest because it goes up behind his back and it's not impinging it. It's not getting his way underneath his arm hooked off on his side. So he hooks it to his own fall arrest just to make it easier and stay out of his way as he's climbing down. If he was to fall, he would certainly go straight to the ground. And if he didn't, that would be another case. But we had a company, in the company I worked for, we had a fatality where a gentleman was rigging the tower and he sat back and put his weight into it, and the block rolled out and he fell 130 feet to his death. This is less than 10 miles from my house. This guy's totally free climbing. He's rigging the tower with a rope. It's hanging from his side. I set up a camera with a tripod with a big 500 millimeter lens right at the end of the driveway. They stopped and looked at me. He sat there for about 5 minutes and he got on the phone. I'm sure he was calling his boss. And he seen I wasn't going to go anywhere. And then he finally started moving and I started snapping pictures. Mm-hmm. And his coworker was working down below inside the tower. You'd think he's safe in there, but he's not. He'd be a mess if he fell in there. Mm-hmm. And he definitely would have fallen outside the tower as well. And he's about 160 feet in the air. And he's all his tie off his equipment is hooked off to himself. And I'm going to hand it over to Pat to finish the rest of the presentation.
So let me just repeat the name of the industry group that that has been pushing its compliance with OSHA. It's the National Association of Tower Erectors, and it's called NATE for short. So anyway, as we were, you know, looking at the problems and the hazards in this industry, and Wiley and I work as a team, I use my ignorance as a resource, in this case, in my partnership with Wiley. But what struck us when we were looking into this problem was that the voices of the workers themselves were missing from the conversation, and that's always a red flag for us. And that the very people, it was really clear to us that the very people who are most at risk and whose health and survival were really up in the air were not part of the conversation. And so this is largely a non-unionized industry, and we learned very quickly that fear, these guys are fearless about climbing these high towers, but they're also very fearful about losing their jobs. And so that fear, it has been a huge issue in this industry. So what we did ultimately after actually lots of hard work, a lot of Wally's work actually, because Wally's it's very obvious that Wally's experience and his technical experience and his easy manner connects really warmly with people in the industry. They instantly understand him. So he really led the conversation, and we organized a very small conference of tower climbers in New York. It was the first, we think, it was the first conference of its kind in New York State, and we think it was probably the first in the nation in this industry. And what distinguished this gathering was that it created a safe and supportive occasion for workers' voices to be heard. We really had to work hard to get each and every one into that room, but it was certainly a small gathering. But a part of that gathering were family members of those who had whose loved ones had died in tower accidents. Let's see. Okay. Next. As this slide illustrates, the gathering was structured to be the workers' focus on the tower industry, and not simply a worker-focused conference. And that's really been disciplining how we've been organizing this. And the difference here is that in the public health, it's, you know, sometimes having a worker focus, that's certainly helpful, and it's often the way we organize. But we really wanted our to challenge ourselves to involve the workers in creating the conversation and in listening. And and we actually pulled in, it was interesting to us that we were able to pull in family members into this conversation as well, because there were clearly some concerns that they had about, this issue. Let's see, okay. So basically, I want to say that what this slide actually, what emerged from the conference was, and the conversation, and was kind of a sort of starting from the bottom up, was a pyramid, not a strict pyramid, but a pyramid of the kinds of problems and issues that workers are working on. Problem identification was one, and they came up with a lot of problems that they saw in terms of their work. Identifying those accountable, they were not shy about identifying some of their own concerns, but the pace of their work certainly came as an issue. This conversation unleashed a lot of identifying technical engineering and research and administrative solutions for some of these problems. Working on developing strategies. In some ways, the technical solutions are easier than, of course, the political ones and the strategic ones. In the process of doing this work, we felt that what we could contribute in some ways was to bring in identify some partners, occupational health partners, because virtually none of these workers knew about occupational health clinics or the clinics as a resource to them, so this was a great outreach opportunity for our clinic. And then, and of course, the top of the challenge is challenging the status quo. Okay. So to finish up, I just want to just say, okay, that this is the workers' stake in this issue. And we're humbled by this process. It's really hard because we're moving from a statewide to we want to have national conversations on this with workers in this industries. But we're not giving up. Thanks.
There's one question in the back.